Welcome back to Should You Watch, the show where you should listen. I'm Magellan. This is Alan. We are Chats, a television podcast. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Hi, Magellan. I'm doing well, thank you. I feel like I'm in a classroom.
You're in a classroom?
I feel like, you know what I feel like? I feel like you're bringing me in as a guest for your classroom, and you're like, this is my best friend, Alan. Hello, Alan. Or hello, Mr. Ibrahim.
That's pretty funny. This show, Alan, it's kind of like Queen Charlotte of Bridgerton story. Who is that? Is that Queen Charlotte?
Are you talking about Bridgerton, like Shondaverse?
The Shondaverse. Is it Queen Charlotte?
Anne? Queen Charlotte : a Bridgerton story.
Wow,
you got it.
I can't believe I got that right. There's like spinoffs to Bridgerton now.
Oh, sure. About Queen Charlotte from Bridgerton?
Yeah. It's part of the, like you said, the Shondaverse.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wait.
So.
Does Bridgerton take place in the same universe as How to Get Away with Murder? It's like, and Grey's Anatomy?
Yeah, I'd like to think. I mean, there's no reason why it can't. Unless Shonda says no.
And then Shonda says no. You know what that means. It means no. It's like when I found out that there were...
Inventing Anna is part of it too. Wait.
Inventing Anna. That's the miniseries about Anna Sorokin.
Con members of New York City's Upper Crust and believing she's a German heiress. Oh, that's kind of interesting.
Oh, it's fascinating. Yeah. It's more interesting to read about, which is another thing that we're going to talk about tonight. Yeah.
Right. Anyway... welcome back to Should You Watch. We watch a season of a show, usually one that's currently airing, and we talk about if you should watch it or not. That's the entire thesis of what we're doing here. We do it every couple months here on the main feed as a little change of pace. This is our 12th episode, and we are covering a Hulu original series called Tiny Beautiful Things, which is based on the collection of advice column essays by Cheryl Strayed, collected from her writings for Dear Sugar, which is an advice column that she started writing in 2012. And I believe that this collection was first collected in, she started 2010. This
collected in 2012.
This was collected in 2012, a couple years into the process there. And this show is a Catherine Hahn vehicle, in which she's playing a kind of loosely fictionalized proxy for Cheryl Strayed in the show. So we're going to talk about that. 8 episodes. That's all you need to know. We watched them all.
Before we get into Tiny Beautiful Things,
I'm so sorry. I totally forgot that we're going to do something else, which is I want to know what else you've been watching on TV.
Yes, this is a new segment. Before we get into our main event tonight, I want to talk about, because we can both talk, of course. I encourage your input if you have some, but I watch a lot of TV. It's like one of my favorite hobbies. It's part of the reason we do this whole dang thing. And I've been watching a lot. I like to keep up with current TV, mostly it because it's fun to have conversations about stuff, and also it helps me do research for Should You Watch and for future chat shows potentially. So I always keep abreast of like what's currently airing, what's popular, what's going viral. The biggest show right now, for sure, in my feeds at least, has been Succession in its fourth and final season. I don't have much to say about it because I'm not watching that one because I don't have the energy to catch up on a 4-season show. But I've been in the midst of several 1- and 2-season shows that I wanted to pay lip service to and talk about briefly with you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, let me hear it. Let's hear it.
It's worth noting that some of these are shows that we've actually covered on Should You Watch that are back for second seasons. And so we're following up on them. And also, you can see this as a supplemental Should You Watch. Like, maybe we won't do full episodes on these shows. Maybe when the seasons are done, we will. But for now, this is a check-in segment, and I'm going to go about it like that. I want to start by talking about a previous Should You Watch show, Yellow Jackets. About 2/3 of the way through its second season as of this recording. This was our first Should You Watch episode. You can find that back on the beginning of the Should You Watch feed or on YouTube or whatever. Yellow Jackets. It's a wonderful show on Showtime about a bunch of girls who in the 1990s on their soccer team goes on a flight to nationals, but they get into a horrible plane accident and they land in the Canadian wilderness. And it's about them surviving in the past and dealing with the trauma of survival while jumping forward to the present in 2022, 2023, as the surviving women are living with that trauma and trying to carve out an existence in our modern day. The second season has been great so far. I have almost nothing but good things to say about it. One of the things we talked about in our Yellow Jackets discussion was like, are they going to cash these checks, right? Because the show is very much like dealing in mysteries and thriller concepts and horror concepts that could very easily be mishandled in a second or third season. To my understanding, the Yellow Jackets folks are planning a 5-season arc, which is bold in our modern television landscape.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck indeed. But the show's doing extremely well and has its fan base. I think what I really love about Yellow Jackets, now having like been steeped in it for so long, is that its characters are not necessarily realistic, definitely realistic in some ways, but like that is how people would react to that absurd situation. It's the situations that are absurd and the way that they react is more believable. I'd say that's my sort of like the thing that catches my heart with this show, is it's just so over the top. And, you know, from its very first scene, this is not a spoiler, this is basically in the cell of the show, we are concerned that the girls are going to engage in cannibalism on the island at some, or in the woods at some point. A little slip there because I've been thinking about Lost a lot, if you can't tell. That gets touched on in season two, and we're talking more about that. So they are cashing in on like the big ideas, and they've dealt with some really gruesome stuff. But I think the character work is still really, really great. And it continues to be a show that you should watch. I can pretty much recommend it without qualms. I do discourage people away from it if you're still uncomfortable with like serious violence on television, or if you don't want to engage in another streaming service by getting Showtime. I'm able to watch it because we have it through Paramount Plus, which we get through the chats feed because of our Trek Chats coverage. That's where we watch Star Trek. If I didn't have it like that, I probably would like, I would find a way to watch it because the show is worth, it's like appointment viewing for me. It's probably one of the better shows this season that I've been watching. So that's Yellow Jackets, super brief. I want to just briefly shout out the Netflix series Beef. I really loved it in the week or two that it took me to watch it. This is a Steven Yeun, Ali Wong vehicle about two people from opposite walks of life but living a similar Asian American experience in Los Angeles who get into a road rage incident and their lives start to intertwine in ridiculous ways. I think A24 is what has that sort of artistic indie movie touch that an A24 picture tends to, and it's very funny. I think Majon and I, like, we watched the trailer, we considered covering it, and you know, it seemed like, oh, is this going to be really intense? And it definitely is, but it's more heartfelt and interesting and like engaging than it is scary or like intense. Not too violent. I think if the cast sounds like people that you want to watch in a show and you can squeeze in 8 episodes, or actually this one's 10, excuse me. It's a 10 episoder on Netflix. If that sounds up your alley, you should totally watch it. If you watch the first episode and you're like, I'm not really gelling with it, you can probably just hop off. It doesn't particularly transform. I will say the final episode is very surreal. They get into some like ridiculous dramatic stakes in episode 9, and then episode 10 is the classic like, oh, things are weird and surreal in this world. So if that's something you're into, you can make it through to the end. But also another reason that we didn't cover it is one of the actors who plays Cousin Isaac on Beef, David Cho. There were some horrible, really gross allegations of or not even allegations, but confirmation that he, on a podcast in 2014, basically admitted to like sexual assault and called it a joke, and can't condone that at all. So I've just felt weird recommending Beef ever since then. It's unfortunate but true. And the show is still good, but the fact that the creators of the show stood by him after all of that is also like kind of horrible. So I'm torn. If you can separate the art from the artist in that way, Beef is still a good show. And if you can't, then I would not blame you literally at all. And then that's Beef. Last but not least, The most weird and interesting new show that I've been watching. I'm so curious if other folks are watching it out there because I haven't heard much talk about it. But it's Peacock's original series, Mrs. Davis. This is an original series coming to us from Damon Lindelof and Tara Hernandez, who is a creative lead on The Big Bang Theory and a writer on that show. She imagined those two people smushing together to make a show about a nun who's trying to stop an evil AI by finding the Holy Grail. It is ridiculous. Okay. It's hilarious. It's IMDb describes it as a comedy, drama, sci-fi. Those are the genre categories, and they're all accurate. It's legitimately laugh-out-loud funny. It's got some great celebrity cameos and like comedic actor cameos. Chris Diamantopoulos plays an amazing character as like a secret super spy. He's hilarious. Betty Gilpin and Jake McDormand are our two leads. I'm not familiar with either of them. Gilpin is playing Simone, this nun who's like very skeptical but very confident in herself. She's the child of two magicians, and so she has learned to become very skeptical of magic and like wizardry and things like that. And McDormand is playing Wiley, her former boyfriend, former I think husband, who's become part of a rebel group bent on stopping Mrs. Davis, this like genius Siri like super duper AI that can talk to people through these little headsets. And it almost feels like a weird like a British drama or something, like just how out there and willing to get funky it is. Every episode it's like, huh, what, that was a choice you made, but it all feels cohesive. I think that's what's like so interesting. It's like watching a magic act that it manages to surprise you, and you go, how the hell did you do that? How did you combine a story about like faith and belief with a brutal takedown of AI technology, which is weirdly prescient, and you couched all of that in like a vibrant, weird comedy? I'm like absolutely like mesmerized by the show and its existence. It's a tough recommend again, like getting Peacock if you don't already have it. It's probably not worth getting it just for this, but if you have a way to watch Mrs. Davis, or if you're like me and your TV came with a year of Peacock Plus, I do strongly encourage you to check it out. It gets an Allen should you watch for sure, but it's weird. You might bounce right off of it and be like, I don't get it, this is stupid, and you might be weirdly hooked on it like I am. Who could say? But that's my check-in. I just wanted to shout out all my shows. These are all like currently airing things, so they're in the conversation. And we're probably not going to do full episodes on them right now, so I figured I would tell you about them.
Well, thank you for telling us. And I got to give a shout out. I have a student who listened to our Yellow Jackets episode because she's a big Yellow Jackets fan. And then she proceeded to offer some corrections to some plot questions that we had that I won't mention because they're spoilers. But that student is a legend for that. That's
shout out to you.
Certainly not mid. anyway, Zoomers.
You're cringe in a good way.
Thank you. You're based.
In a bad way.
speaking of based, let's talk about Tiny Beautiful Things, which is based on a book, like we said before, of the collected writings of Sugar, a.k.a. Cheryl Strayed. And yeah, like we said before, it's an 8-episode drama series on Hulu that was produced by Reese Witherspoon. She also used some other tools as well in the production process, not just a spoon. Okay. No, her last name is Witherspoon, which I only mentioned because Reese Witherspoon played Cheryl Strayed in a movie adaptation of her memoir, Wild, which is about her hiking the Pacific Crest Trail in the aftermath of her mother's death. And some of those themes and ideas show up in this show. But yeah, so we're going to talk about Tiny Beautiful Things. So what got us to watch this one? It was on a list of like shows that are out right now. And then we pitched them to our listeners and they liked this one. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think we've gotten some feedback from listeners that what they want out of Should You Watch is not just like, should I watch the popular show that everybody's talking about, but also should I watch the thing that I've heard about, but I don't actually know if it's good or not. And that's, I think, where our decision to cover Tiny Beautiful Things came from, because this show got a huge marketing push on Hulu internally, as well as on places like Tumblr and elsewhere. So, like, mm-hmm. they've been pushing this show really hard. It has a lot of talent behind it. You mentioned Witherspoon producing. We also have Laura Dern producing, who was in Wild as well. Mm-hmm. So it feels like there is a subsection of Hollywood that has this sort of fascination with Strayed and her life and her story. And, you know, you toss in a couple of great actors and actresses, and you've got yourself a sauce, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that's where we decided to cover it from. Do you want to give sort of an overview of the series, or should I?
I'm happy to. So essentially, as I was saying before, Catherine Hahn plays a kind of fictionalized version of a person similar to Cheryl Strayed named Claire. And when we join Claire, she is in the midst of some marital turmoil. She's been recently kicked out of her house by her husband because she gave her daughter's college fund to her brother for reasons that we find out later. And she's not having a super great time with that. And the show is kind of about, in the present, her sorting through those issues as she also takes on writing for an online advice column called Dear Sugar.
Right.
And throughout the show, as she is giving advice to people who write into the advice column, she's digging up her own memories of her own past to try to find the kernels of wisdom needed to pass that along to other people. So the show kind of ping-pongs back and forth between present day Claire, past Claire, and most of the past stuff is kind of like her in the latter part of college or having just graduated, kind of right after, right before, and during the process of her mother passing away from cancer. And so those are kind of the big tentpole things of the show.
Beautiful. Yeah, and it is kind of a vignette story. It goes in linear order generally on both timelines, mm-hmm. but not exactly. I think where it diverges from linear order is where I find the story very interesting, because, mm-hmm. you know, as we go on, it's like, we see, because we start the show, you know, getting into like the pilot a little bit, in a like distraught state of Claire's life. And it's like, oh man, this woman is in such a bad place. Did she cause it herself? What happened to her to make her the way she is? And that's the question that they put at the center of Tiny Beautiful Things. And it becomes a show sort of about like empathizing and learning what it means to become that person. And how do you climb out of that bad place? And what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to talk about what we liked and didn't like from this first episode. We like to do, you know, on Should You Watch, you know, like,
yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I feel like I'm missing a segment though, so I'm gonna pass that over to you.
Well, I think we can sort of talk about it abstractly before we talk about the specifics of the plot. We could talk about the first.
Yeah.
Episode, and then we could talk about the show as a whole, and we'll have timestamps in the description about each of those things.
Sure.
But I feel like some of the things we can say here, I mean, we're basically within the we could spoil the first episode right now.
Yeah.
Right?
We can do general and pilot discussion here.
In one lump. Yeah. I think something that I want to share just right off the bat is I was a big fan of. There was a Dear Sugars podcast that was mm-hmm. a New York Times podcast a few years ago that ended in like 2018. And I think I started listening to it in either 2017 or 2018. Oh, it only went from 17 to 18, actually. So I started listening to it like partway along its run. And I really enjoyed that show. So that's like my exposure to Cheryl Strayed. And I think we were talking about this before the podcast, but to me, I think what I'm going to try to be very intentional about in our conversations about this show is like identifying the fact that I was not exactly in the right place to watch it. And I don't think I was like entirely emotionally available to the show mm-hmm. for it to impact me in the way that it could have. Which, you know, there might be some critiques of the show in there. There might be some critiques of how I approached it or what I was fixated on.
Yeah.
But what I can identify is it's like, if you like that sort of Dear Sugar advice with a little splash of personal life, if you like memoir that's like, fuck, you know, this was hard, but here's the beautiful thing that I got out of it, this show does that pretty capably, I would say. And it's just a question of like, are you in the right headspace to meet it there a lot of the time?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the challenge of meeting it there. I saw reviews of this show. I peeked at them just before starting it, and it seemed like the general consensus was that if you let this show in and you let it affect you, it'll wreck you. It's very emotionally heavy. If you aren't able to meet it halfway, it's borderline insufferable. And I felt that sort of pull, like, from the top of it. I was like, oh, God. Because I had no familiarity with Cheryl Strayed, and I had only seen, like, this poster, right? Like, Tiny Beautiful Things, one of the most generic three-word titles ever. And it's like, oh, Catherine Ahn, I do love her. I love Catherine Ahn. I want to shout her out from the top, from the rooftops. She is the gem at the center of the show and at the center of so many works that she's in ever since I saw her in Wanderlust in 2012. I'm like, damn. She's good, man. She can be funny and dramatic. But I had like no familiarity with Dear Sugar or any of that stuff. So I went into this kind of like as close to a blank slate as possible. And I have a question for you, and maybe this will help us guide our discussion, because this show is not necessarily built for us, right? Like, we are not the exact target audience, I think, of Tiny Beautiful Things. The show at times feels like it's aiming for an older crowd, maybe young mothers or teenage women. I can't tell. Do you feel like that, or do you feel like we are more in the target of the show?
It's tough to say. I mean, I think they're going for... This is the thing that was hard for me to identify about the show, is they are saying it's a show based on Tiny Beautiful Things and the essay collection. And so it's sort of like, this is a story about Cheryl Strayed's life. It felt like is what it was going into it.
Yeah.
And her life and like authentically sharing that life is such a huge part of her work.
Yes.
And so what was tough for me to wrap my head around is the show then like takes a lot of liberties and fictionalizes a lot of aspects of her life for the sake of having this like TV character at the center of their show. And so my gut answer to your question is like, fans of Cheryl Strayed would like this show because it's the tone of her work. It conveys the messages of her work. It carries a lot of the same themes and emphasis on kind of rawness, but it's also very TV-ified in the sense that some of the decisions that they make to dramatize it feel at times a little overly dramatic or inauthentic. And so that makes it hard for me to identify exactly who it's for. And I think the answer is probably like, it is a labor of love and a passion project for like people older than us who are middle-aged folks who have kids and have, you know, marital problems. And then it has kind of gone through this filter of like, and now let's make sure that it's a streaming TV show that has like plot beats that carry you from episode to episode and has like a younger character who the young kids can hang out with or whatever. So that's how it reads to me. I don't think like one of my students would get much out of this show, for example, but I think like my girlfriend, if she was going to watch it, who's our age, might get something out of it, but also might have a similar experience to me where it's like, I see what we're going for here, but I'm like doing too much thinking and not enough feeling.
Well said. No, that's absolutely true. Here's my operating question that I think is going to get the discussion in the right direction. Would you recommend Tiny Beautiful Things, the Hulu series, to your mother?
I was just thinking about that. Yes. Yes, I would.
Because I think, like, we both know your mom. She's a wonderful person. I mean,
there's, like, some sex in the show.
That's what I'm about to say. That's exactly it.
So, I don't want to recommend that to my mom, but go ahead.
We're on the same wavelength here, 100%.
Yeah.
It's, like, emotionally and, like, visually and texturally the kind of stuff that, like, your mom would probably really, really like. And people like your mom. Like, that's a great audience to appeal to. But there's like a good amount of plot that can get kind of overwhelming in parts. And also there is, and this is when you talk about it becoming a like edgy show for streaming. There's a lot of sex in this show, like basically every episode.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I felt like we have some sort of sex scene talking about sex, and like that's straight, right? Like that's coming from the fact that she's very naked and vulnerable about her sex life and about like the problems that she's had like in marital life with sex. I totally understand it. And like sex is used as a replacement for vulnerability and honesty in the series, times, at least, especially with the young plot line, like a little young Claire, I mean. But like it also is just like a little bit, don't you want to watch a sex scene every 30 minutes kind of? And that's where I'm like,
yeah.
Do you want to appeal to moms? Because they get kind of, a lot of moms don't want to, some do, some super duper do.
Hey, but, I don't know if you've met a lot of moms,
but generally, no, they're not like
you think.
Yeah. Plenty do. But not all moms want to watch like 8 episodes of like teenagers having sex, adults having sex.
Sure.
All that stuff.
Sure.
So I think that's a qualm right out the gate. From episode one, I mean, that's like the center. Is the inciting event in the first episode the sexual event? I mean,
let's not talk about plot unless we're ready to talk about the whole series.
Okay. I think. Well, there are like important inciting sexual events that the show comes back to over and over again, and that's where I feel like they actually handle it maturely, because it's like, that happened. Yeah, we showed a scene of it, like whatever, but it matters that we showed it and it like affected the characters. I'm not trying to say like these are all just male gazey, like it's a sex scene and then we move on. It's like, no, they do them for a reason. There's just there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
My last thing overall is that the show is a, for me, felt like emotional exercise. I mentioned this again to you before the podcast, but going into Tiny Beautiful Things, you have to, like Magellan's saying, like you struggle to like get to its emotional level. I found that very difficult as well, and that waxed and waned throughout the 8 episodes. But when it worked, I was like, it felt like exercise, where I'm like, I've done this, I've practiced it, I know when the music and the visuals are telling me to feel something, and I'm feeling it, and that's what I come to TV for, right? Is to feel things. And then sometimes I just like, you have a bad day, you have a bad workout day, and you're like, no, you know what? It's happening in front of me. I know I'm supposed to care. The lines are well written because they're literally pulling from Dear Sugar, and I don't care. And so that came and went throughout the series for me.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really good analogy. And I think it's at the heart of why, to me, this sort of story, this sort of content, has always affected me more in reading it than in watching it. Because like when I was in high school, I took AP language and composition, and we read some like memoir type stuff in that class. And I remember the things that I read for that class that were like of a piece with some of the themes discussed in the show. Those things were really affecting, I think, because the way in which I interacted with those stories was through reading. And so it felt like a more intimate experience, and it felt like a more kind of effortful experience on my part as well, because I had to actually sit and read. And also, besides that, it's also an experience that I sort of set the pace of myself, right? Whereas with this show, you know, for but it's just kind of a way that the visual medium works, that like if I'm checked out or if I'm like something distracted me over there and now I got to tune back in, or like I'm feeling a little weird right now in this specific moment and the scene comes by on the screen, it could hit me at a time where I'm not ready for it or where I'm not like giving something. And it definitely doesn't feel nearly as intimate as reading. So there were plenty of moments where like the music's hitting and the narration's hitting and I'm like, yes, whoa, these are cool words. God, I wish I was reading them right now.
Yeah, you know? Man. Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And that act of adapting, I can't think of another thing that I've seen that's an adaptation of like an essay or like an advice column. Like that's a hard thing to adapt. Because it's one thing to adapt Wild, which is a memoir where Cheryl Strayed has like crafted a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Here we go. Versus Tiny Beautiful Things, which is a collection of disconnected essays. And I don't know if I've ever seen a show or a movie try to do that. And I think, you know, the show is effective sometimes in doing that because it treats each episode like an essay, where each episode has like a thematic conceit.
Yeah, there's a question being asked and she's answering it, and we're seeing the answer through her life experience.
Yeah, and those are the episodes that are like, when they do that formula successfully, that's where the show works for me the most. But at the end of the day, I think I just like wasn't quite ready to meet it where it was, and because I was watching it, that had a negative impact on my viewing experience.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
it brings to question the value of filming this, because right. It gives the show a like Lifetime original movie feel of like, here's a person, you should care about them, and the music and the visuals are going to tell you why. Oh my God, isn't that sad? And it's like, Cheryl's writing is not like that. It's not like, you should care about this because I'm telling you to. It's like, you should care about this because it relates to something in your life, and it feels relevant to everyone reading it. That is like why Dear Sugar was successful, is it felt universal despite being deeply unique and personal, right?
Right.
But I want to talk about some specifics. So do you mind if we move into the pilot?
Yeah, let's do that.
So we're talking about the pilot now. This is the first episode of Tiny Beautiful Things. I really liked the top two performances. We were mistaken, by the way. IMDb has a crediting issue with this series.
Yeah.
Somebody had told us in our Discord that, like, oh, do you know this? That Catherine Hahn's only in two episodes. For whatever reason, they only credited her in episodes 1 and 2. I'm wondering why that happened. If it's like this show is just bugged on IMDb, or did she not take credit for later episodes, or what? Because like different people are like, almost all of the number of episode credits are wrong on there.
I see.
So it's like, so I thought that what they were going to do is like the show is going to be bookended by her at the beginning and end, being like, here's my life.
Yeah.
But it's actually framing each little vignette with like, here's what she's doing in the present. And here's a moment where it literally flashes back, like match cut to a young Claire doing the same thing or processing a similar event in a different way.
Yeah.
And I think that Catherine Hahn and Sarah Pidgeon, who plays young Claire throughout most of this show, like teenage Claire, not like child Claire, do a really great job of seeming like each other, like of feeling like this is a person who grows into this other person.
Yeah, I agree.
From minute one, you have the feeling that Sarah Pidgeon is like both playing Catherine Hahn, but also playing Cheryl Strayed, which is like so tough because she's so headstrong and so like self-assured. But that comes from so much trauma that at times it can feel like, oh, man, this is like just so heavy. And that was like my problem with the pilot, right? Was I didn't know why any of this stuff was happening. And it just happens. Like the show kind of jumps you into the middle of things and then spends the next 7 episodes explaining why they are the way they are. And that made this first episode really tough for me. Because, like, she's writing into the column at first. And they're like, I really like your writing. And then she's asked to write for it. And that's not made clear until the last, like, 10 minutes. We know that she has this husband. And you know that she has a brother. But we don't know what happened.
Right. And
the stuff in the past is, like, such a small little story about, like, you know, her mom trying to buy her a coat. And she complained about it. It's like, okay, these are so small scale, but I don't understand what the arc of this show is yet. Mm-hmm. Did you feel similarly in the pilot that it was like kind of confusing?
Yeah, it was a little disorienting in the first episode to understand, because they're having to do exposition for both the present and the past, and they're doing the present story like you're saying in medias res, and we're setting up like what's going on with her marriage, how does she become Dear Sugar, what is the deal with her mom, what already happened with her family. You know, it's a lot of information to try to cover in a short episode. I think the show makes a good use of its episode length, but for this pilot, 29 minutes or whatever feels pretty constrained to cover all the information it's trying to cover. So I definitely found myself a little confused on what is going on exactly in this, but by the end of it I think it all kind of starts to make sense.
Yeah, it ties itself into a nice little bow. Even the poster that I talked about with Claire holding the balloon, to make sense by the end of the first episode. And this is like the litmus test for whether or not you should watch, like, you're going to continue on with Tiny Beautiful Things after the pilot, is the reveal of the title and why it's called that. Because, like we joked, it's such a generic title. What could this possibly mean? It's not going to mean anything. And we are seeing a young both Claires in like such a low point in their lives that she starts talking about like what you deserve. And when you're so depressed and so worn down by the world, you feel like you don't deserve things. And we get this beautiful line, clearly again pulled directly from an essay, where she mentions like something as small as a purple balloon, something as small as like a little thing like that. You see it and you don't think it belongs to you. You think that you don't deserve tiny beautiful things when you're at your worst. And we all do, and we need to accept that we deserve the little things. It's like, mm-hmm. when I say it's a litmus test, I mean like if that stirred something in you, yeah. then like you're good. If that's corny to you, then like be warned, it's gonna get cornier.
right.
So I thought that was really smart that they ended the pilot with like the explanation of the title and this like, hey, here's like peak corny for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay with this? Does this ring true to you or not?
Yeah.
Because it's also trying to do the like 90s sitcom thing of like let's teach a lesson at the end of each one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those like last 5 minutes are often my favorite part of each episode.
Yes, because like I think so too.
Everything connects, the themes connect, the letter gets answered, and you're like, oh, you did it, you brought it home. And sometimes the road that they take to get there is not always very fun.
Yeah, but I think it's a smart structure for this show that mm-hmm. you get the, like, I like that she reads, and this happens in later episodes, but she'll read the email from someone kind of wherever she is in the course of her own plot.
Yeah.
And so you're thinking about it as she is. And there's no, like, she's brainstorming, what do I say in this? The act of living is the thing that helps her to understand what to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all kind of culminates in this, you know, perfectly choreographed moment of the message and the past and the future and the present are combining into one thing. And I think they pretty much land that every single time, which
yes.
is unimaginable that they could do it right in each episode, but I'm pretty sure they do.
Right.
Yeah. I think the thing that I wish we'd seen way more of that was in the pilot is I love the scene where she's in the car with the first guy who's Sugar, and
yeah.
he's this like shitty dude who made up the persona of a middle-aged white woman because he figured that's somebody that people would listen to and want advice from. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, maybe you should do this because like you're basically this character that I made up. And it's not that I wanted to see more of that guy necessarily, because I think he's a fine character to sort of like give you the thing in the first episode and then be gone. But I think what I wanted more of from the show that it doesn't really do much is I wanted more of a like reflection and thought process of, you know, because she initially refuses the call here. And
yeah.
says like, I don't want to do this. I don't think that I'm somebody who can give advice, right?
Mm-hmm.
My life is so fucked up, I can't possibly tell people what they should be doing. And I think I wanted the show to do a little more thinking about, like, what does it mean to be sugar?
Right.
But it just kind of isn't about that. So if you watch the scene in the pilot and you're like, oh, cool, there's going to be some reflection about, like, dear sugar and, you know, what does it mean to kind of, like, play a character that has an authenticity to it but is still anonymous? And the show is basically not about that at all.
No, it's not.
So to me, that was like an interesting thing that I was hoping to see more of, but it isn't a thing. So that's kind of part of the should you watch equation, I think, with this pilot episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it actually ties into a couple of things. We got two questions in our Discord about this that we solicited some questions. We already covered one of them, which is from Oldest Romans. Why is the title so annoyingly generic, and how does it relate to the trend of generic midlife crisis women movies we've been seeing lately? Which is a great question.
Sheesh.
The title is generic because the show is technically generic, but also you gotta have a little bit of warmth in your heart for the explanation of Tiny Beautiful Things. Do we deserve Tiny Beautiful Things when we're at our worst in our lives? Some people say no. When you're really depressed, it's hard to say yes to that. Yeah. And that did make me choke up a little bit because I felt that. I've had that exact, like, it resonated like Cheryl Strayed's writing. I was like, yeah. I felt that. And how does it relate to the trend of generic midlife crisis women movies? There's the bad part of Tiny Beautiful Things for me is when it feels like I can't relate to my daughter. I'm such a mess. And it's like becomes like borderline unrealistic in parts, just like, I am a woman going through a midlife crisis that other women in their midlife crises are going to relate to. That's where the show, I bounce off of it.
Yeah, I think that's where, do you want to talk about the plot of the rest of the show?
Sure.
Like that transition. I think, you know, the point here is that where the show's at its strongest is when it's doing the, like, plain-spoken idiom, the rawness of Cheryl Strayed's writing, and is saying stuff like Tiny Beautiful Things, which out of context you're like, what does that mean? But in context it's like, wow, okay, that was like a very finely crafted simple sentence that said everything it needed to say. And there's scenes like that in the show that are just finely crafted simple scenes about a person feeling a thing and having a hard time or discovering something and trying to share that. And there's a lot of moments like that in the show that are really tiny, beautiful things.
Bingo.
The parts where I got the most frustrated are the parts that are like just blatant deviations from Cheryl Strayed's life. Like,
yes,
at the point where she is coming on to writing Dear Sugar, she did not have a teenage child. She had like two young children. And so the teenage daughter stuff is fine, I guess. I mean, that's where it feels like, it's a show where can we ever get along? And I feel like I've seen this show before and it starts to feel fictional because it is.
Yeah.
And then it's like, our daughter's having a threesome in our bed or whatever. And you're like, what are you talking about? This didn't happen to you. Maybe it happened to somebody. Maybe there's a Dear Sugar letter about it and they adapted that. I don't know because I haven't read all of them. But like,
why are this is what I'm talking about, where all of the stuff that they fictionalized feels like stuff for like the older moms out there who are going to be like, oh, like, I really think that the Ray plotline, disregarding the racial stuff, which we have to talk about, is just like, hey, moms, don't you sometimes feel like you can't relate to your daughter? And it's like, that is an important part of her story. But Ray goes straight to the sidelines by the end of the series so much that I'm like, why did you build up this threesome plot like it was such a big deal? And everything about it feels farcical. Like when she visits Montana, Ray's girlfriend and crush. And there's this whole, and this is one of the scenes that's like in the trailer, like, oh, I yell at her and I say that she's like attractive and dumb. And then her brother films me on TikTok. There's a TikTok, like that's in the trailer. It sucks. Like that's like my least favorite plot line in the whole show, because I think Ray could be a fleshed out character, but it just feels like they added that to be like, hey, mom, like specifically the fact that she goes by Ray and not Frankie Ray, which is named after Claire's mom, is like a, are you guys just doing like a trans kid thing? Like, I know that's not what they're doing, but
right.
Yeah. That's what you want the moms to relate to. It's like, don't you, aren't you struggling with how your kid doesn't want to be called by their name anymore? It's like,
yeah,
it feels really artificial and really like pandering almost. That's my problem with that plot line.
Yeah, I agree. It just, I don't know. Because there's a version of this where, okay, you age the real life kids up because there's not a lot of drama with young kids, or you don't want to hire child actors or whatever. Like, sure, that's, you're adapting something. It doesn't have to be a biography or a biopic show. But yeah, it just ends up creating all of these like plotty decisions that I don't think really result in deeper thematic like conclusions about the show. So, because a lot of the theming of the show is rooted in Claire trying to sort through her grief over her mom's death and like move on and heal from that, and the like parental stuff and even the marital stuff to a certain extent is not exactly related. There's more relevance with the marital stuff and like her relationship with sex, and you know, she like explicitly describes that in one of the episodes where she's trying to sell this essay that links sex and grief. And I think that's interesting. And I think the show more or less handles that linkage pretty well. But a lot of the present day stuff, when I was first watching the show at the beginning, I was like, oh, all this past stuff feels so random. And then by the end of it, I was like, why are we doing anything in the present? Like,
yes. Yes.
Let's just look at the past, which is pretty interesting that that shift happened over the course of the show.
I loved everything with her brother. I saw all... We're talking about the full scope of the show right now?
Yeah, we are. We are.
I love everything with Lucas and, like, the specter of Lucas. Because in the beginning, he's taken... Or she has given him Ray's college fund, $15,000. We're freaking out about that. We see so much of Lucas in the past and how he coped with their mom's death by getting into drugs and alcohol. And he tried to continue to be a good brother and struggled with that. And Claire found fulfillment from, like, being an older sibling to him. But... like, then they fell apart and there was a distance because he led to her not being there when their mom died. And right then and there is when you're like, we need to see Lucas in the present day. And when we finally do, that's like one of my favorite scenes in the show, is the like naked vulnerability of like, hey, what's up? And like, it's not surprising to her. She knows what Lucas looks like, but we are having this moment of like, that is the guy that we've been seeing in the past for so long. And finally, the structure of the show starts to work for me. But like, I agree. I never felt that with Danny. Even in the episode where we show how they met and how they had the kid, which I thought was like a little cute. Like, oh, go be a singer. Even though, again, that's all fictionalized. Go, Danny, go be an artist. No, he comes back. He wants to stay down and be the dad that stuck around. I have to be honest. I don't think that the actor who plays Danny and Catherine Hahn have chemistry.
I don't think so either.
And it sucks because if they did, the show would be better. Like,
yeah,
their love is supposed to matter and the way that it has dissolved is supposed to matter. But like, they have like comedic chemistry, but not romantic chemistry at all.
Yeah, like they clearly like they really work well on screen together. And I wonder if it was even a choice to try to like intentionally play distance between them because they're like not having sex and having difficulties and whatever. Mm-hmm. And maybe that on the screen just like doesn't quite play in the way that they were hoping it would. That's my guess, because both of them are really great performers and they work really well in their scenes together. But I think they were probably going for like, there's distance here, and it just ended up feeling like we're pals and there wasn't like kind of a romantic charge between them, really. So I wasn't like rooting for their relationship, which maybe I wasn't supposed to because it doesn't last. but I don't know. It was definitely odd.
By the time he left, I was like, you know what? Good for him. I'm happy. He doesn't. Right. He never seemed happy here, and I'm sad for Ray, but also like, go. You know, like she has things she needs to deal with.
Yeah.
I feel like I've said my piece on that, but also the fact that they chose to have Ray be mixed race and to have Danny be black, and like that is a small but notable aspect of like the relationship tension, especially in the like really awkward episode where she hangs out with his family at Easter.
Yeah, because her husband in real life is not African American. Like, correct. That's a choice for the show, which again, that's fine. We can make choices in adaptation. We want to have a more diverse cast. Cool. We can do that. But yeah, that episode is super, super weird where we're hanging out with his family and Claire says stuff like, this city is crawling with your relatives. What a weird thing to say.
We don't talk about how gross that is to say. Yeah, she just says it.
Where one of the moments, like one of Danny's relatives is like this older black woman who sits down with Claire to give her some wisdom. And it's like, what is happening right now? Why is this a thing? And there's like little moments where they reference it, right? Because when they're in couples counseling, she says to him, oh, you don't understand, you know, what it means to start from the bottom or whatever she says. And he's like, well, I'm a black man in America, so I do understand that. And she's like, well, I mean, like growing up poor. So there's like that weird little moment. There's a moment where Ray calls her mom out for being like a typical white feminist who's like valuing her private school education over a predominantly black public school, and that's a thing. These just kind of like hollow attempts to acknowledge it but without doing something with it. I don't know what I would have wanted them to do, but
if they just cast a white guy, then the show is all white it's a white people show for white people,
right.
This is what happens when if you're going to put diversity into your show in with intention, you have to commit to it and make it realistic. I'm not saying make it about that. I definitely don't want that. I'm saying like Ray is a mixed race girl in high school, and not once do we talk about that, or do we even talk? I think Ray's plotline is by far the worst in the entire show. Because it's so rushed and so misunderstood, almost to the point of like, are they just saying that Claire doesn't understand her daughter, and so we don't understand her daughter's like interiority? Because the show is very deliberate with its perspective. But like, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about the like class dynamic of her girlfriend Montana being like a little bit more upper class, other than like, wow, you have a lot of stairs. Like, it's just ideas and ideas and ideas brought up and not handled. The only stuff that I feel like is fully handled is Claire and Lucas, and Claire's trying to be a better member of the family and failing. But I think Claire and Lucas is the strongest relationship in the show.
Yeah.
I think episodes like The Nose, episode 5, which is where like we get the introduction of the Machu Picchu thing. Claire's family, when they were kids, were saving up to go there. And then her mom got cancer and they obviously didn't do that anymore. We learned a lot about like Lucas's struggles in that one. We learn about why she loves her mom so much. This is another like point of friction for me, though. So Merritt Wever is here playing Frankie Sr., Claire's mom, in the past scenes. I like Merritt Wever. I think she's good. I forgot that when I recognized her. I spent this whole time going like, I know that mom somewhere. And I remember that show. Speaking of like mediocre 8-episode shows from the 2020s, I chatsummed the HBO show Run 3 years ago. And I forget that I watched it. She's the main character in that show. Her and Donald Gleason are playing against each other. Yeah. What a bad fucking show. And someone in the chat recently was like, oh, you chatsumed it, but you didn't like it. And it's like, I chatsumed it while I was watching it, okay? Chatsums are live documents. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, neither here nor there. But I loved her in Run. I thought she was really charismatic. And in this She is the vision that Claire has of her mom and not a real person.
Right.
She's like a perfect, like, cancer mom storyline. Not to be crass, but like, I was so nice to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I was so nice to you guys. And your dad was a purely, fully, wholeheartedly evil man who we're never going to show until we have to. And I was the good mom who stuck around and let's like close our eyes and look at the horses. And I'm going to like make you guys some food and buy you a dress and all this stuff. And like they're getting married. We were like nothing to do because all she has to do is play like idealistic and kind.
Yeah.
It's a weird creative choice because so much of the past is like, oh, these are real people who like feel real things. And I think Claire and Lucas exemplify that. But then their mom is just like a nice lady.
Yeah, I think there's a missed opportunity here to clarify that a little bit more.
Clarify.
Because in that final confrontation that she has with Lucas and her dad, Lucas is like, look, our mom wasn't this perfect person that you make her out to be. So there is an awareness on the show's part that this portrayal is pretty rosy. But there's not really discussion of, well, what do we do with that? You know, the fact that she's remembering her mom so kind of placidly. And even that extends to the way that she remembers her first husband as like this kind of, oh, shucks, honey, kind of guy. When clearly he's got some shit going on. He's trying to rush into marrying her like 3 months in and he's got weird shit going on with his parents. And
do they ever say why he's weird?
No, they don't.
It's funny because I googled Cheryl Strayed first husband and there is a guy, like the years actually line up that she was married in like the late 80s into the mid 90s, but he's just like an investment banker now. And I was like, this is the weirdest thing about Tiny Beautiful Things is being able to look up these characters and be like, who are you actually? neither here nor there though, sorry to interrupt your point.
But that's a similar thing where like clearly we're getting a very particular version of whoever this person actually was. And the show is not necessarily interested in comparing that vision to actual reality or like revisiting our memories to see if they're accurate, whatever. And it doesn't have to be interested in that. But it's weird that they pay lip service to it in the last episode and that the dad is in the show. Like, why bring the dad into the show at all if you're not interested in figuring out if the dad sucked or not? You know what I mean?
Right.
So that makes, like, are they going to get a second season or something to dig into that a little bit more? I don't know.
I don't think they will, and I don't particularly want one.
Yeah, it just felt like they ended up throwing a lot of stuff at the show, and I think the core thing, which is like, I have been through some hard stuff, I've experienced grief and loss, and I've made choices that I regret, and because I've lived that life and lived through that life and found beauty, I can give advice to people and here's my advice. Like that core is really great. And I think you see a little bit of it in every single episode. And then I think there are individual plot considerations and character considerations that are brought in by all of the plotty stuff they're trying to do that are just too numerous for this show to resolve in 4 hours.
Like what if we got a whole episode about Tim Roth's character?
That scene was great.
In the hot tub? Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
Tim Roth inexplicably in this show.
What a great turn. I love that he's in it and the whole thing is like she's on... That was my favorite episode, I think.
Yeah.
The writer's really retreat good. One. Uh-huh. First of all, I love that she's like trying to dodge this abandonment a writing seminar when like that is a thing she should really be investigating about herself and her issues with abandonment. But anyway, so she like meets Tim Roth in a I almost said in a bubble bath, but that's not what it is.
Like a big adult bubble bath.
Yeah. God, I'd love to meet Tim Roth in a bubble bath though. But and he's like a famous writer who she loves, and she wrote fan mail too, and she got a response, and it turns out it was his wife that wrote the response, and it's just like a fun kind of wry comedic scene that they have. And Tim Roth plays it so great, where he's clearly a guy who used to be a huge dick and has just been completely exhausted by his own life and is now kind of like trying to be basically kind and gentle with people in the wake of that. And I think he communicates that so well. It's such a fun character to see him play.
Yeah, I loved him in that. And it also grounds her back into the real world for a bit, because so much of the story is like hyper focused on Claire's life, Claire's family, Claire's affairs, and like the surrealism and the attachment she feels to her past, right? And then that's like, oh no, there's like real people. Like, she as a writer was inspired by a real person who let her down, and he's trying to be nice to her, but it's struggling with it. Like, that's all outside influence for once, which the show doesn't have. She doesn't have enough of in this story, although I'm sure obviously Straya did have. Do you have any other like big notes on the show though? Because I feel like we've covered like overall thoughts.
Let me take a look. Did you have a favorite episode?
Oh, that's a very good question. I started to like the elder folks home, like with that weird like queer kid who works at the desk and stuff, and the woman with Alzheimer's who she sleeps in her bed because no one's gonna believe her, which is like fucked up, but also funny to me. I started to like all that plot, but then it just got boring and I stopped caring. I'm trying to think about which one had the best ending, because that would definitely be the one for me. Under the Stars, that's episode four. That's like a lot of the it is unfortunately the one with Easter, but I did want to like see stuff about Claire coming to God a little bit in that, because for me as a Christian, I'm like, when you are that low in your life, one of the last reservoirs for you to pull yourself out is like a belief in a higher power. So it was nice for me to see that. I loved the comedy in episode six of them being told by the couple's therapist to go to a home to have sex, and Claire hears Danny's like porn on a Bluetooth speaker, which traumatizing, especially for Ray, right? And she's like, oh, it's sex in a Home Depot, we should do that. And they go to the Home Depot, sit in the parking lot, and they're too scared because there's a lot of people there today. And he's like, let's just go to a hotel. And then they can't afford the hotel. Like, it's so good.
Yeah.
So I guess episode six is my real answer.
That's good. I have a couple random thoughts. I really ended up liking the nose episode a lot. I like that it starts with this weird moment of mystery where Ray made her mom a nose mug, and you're like, what? The heck?
It's like a joke. Mean?
And then we kind of, I don't know if this really happened to Cheryl Strayed, the whole like, my mom is going to college with me thing.
But like, that was interesting.
It was kind of interesting doing a little goofy movie in the middle of the show.
You said a goofy movie in your notes, and I didn't remember what you meant. I was like, there's no road trip in this. And then I remember the original goofy movie.
Yeah. But I really liked the way that episode brought in the symbol of the nose and kind of did the whole, like, you know, it's this essay that she, or this story that she, like, didn't like when she was in college. And it was the reason she didn't graduate. And now she has this understanding of what it means, which is just that, like, it doesn't really mean much more than what it is. Just wouldn't it suck if you woke up and didn't have a nose and you had to figure out what to do about it? And it led to the like Dear Sugar response moment that I think was one of my favorites, where she describes healing as doing the impossible thing every single day.
Yeah.
Which feels right. So I think the nose is my second favorite episode after Go.
Yeah, it's valid. Go is great. Once I was at Go, I was like, I'm finishing this show. Let's go.
The show definitely gets better as it goes on, I would say.
Yeah.
So
you get more invested.
Yes. Yeah, that's probably true. It's a little convenient in the plotty show way that her writing the go thing is then something that Danny reads and he's like, I just gotta go. I don't know.
Especially this... because she stayed with her second husband. This is entirely fictional.
Right. Like, if the show was more marketing itself as this is totally fiction, this is a drama show about a woman who writes an advice column, that would be one thing. But it's trying to be that and also trying to be like the Cheryl Strayed show. And so it's a little distracting when it does things like that, I think. And also they're doing this thing of like, maybe Danny's in love with their marriage counselor, which
they never do anything with that.
No, they just have a moment in the last episode where he comes by and he's like, thanks for sending me that sugar thing. And he like asked her to come to the office at a weird time or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's so it.
That's all weird. I wasn't crazy about that part of the plot. I think my last thing that I really enjoyed about the show is all of the moments where they do like kind of a magical realist thing with the people who are asking for advice, and she sees those people places.
Yeah.
I wish there was more of that, because every time the show did that, I thought it was really engaging and cool.
My favorite cinematic, I did love that stuff, but I think my favorite cinematic technique was the match cutting between past and present Claire until they just like, kind of overdo it. Like, it's clever. Yes. And in the last episode, it's like every cut is past, present, like, and I see the poetry they're going for, but it feels excessive. The Tiny Beautiful Things is a show that invites you to be emotionally invested. And if you don't, then you will not have a good time. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that brings me to my question that we ask each other every 3 months here, Magellan. Uh-huh. Should you watch Tiny Beautiful Things?
Look, it's... I think you probably know, you know, if I were to say, like, okay, it's about a middle-aged woman who's having marital issues and parental issues, and she's also dealing with, like, past grief and relationship trauma, and she's finding a way to work through all of that and still see what's beautiful in life. From that, you probably know if that's the kind of thing that you're in the mood for, or if that's a kind of story that you tend to want to watch. And I think it's not, like, going to drastically deviate from your initial feeling about that log line. I think from there, you know, see how it's striking you. And I would say it's like a pretty solid version of this, with the caveat that you kind of should just let the plot wash over you and not try to track it too closely, not try to make it make too much sense, and just sort of focus on like the emotional reality of it. And if you're down for that, it's only 8 episodes. They're pretty short. It's a breeze to watch. It gets better as it goes. So I'm glad that we watched it, even if it wasn't quite hitting me at the right moment. Mm-hmm. So I would say this is like a, yeah, one thumb up instead of two kind of thing. What about you?
Yeah, I was ready to give it a conditional you should watch. Like, if you like the first episode, then you should stick with it. I think that the pilot doesn't do a great job of conveying how consistent the show can get and how like strong in its storytelling it gets. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't like giving a conditional should you watch every week, because it's like, if you listen to this podcast was longer than the first episode, so you already invested more than I'm telling you to invest. I agree with what you're saying. If the premise sounds appealing to you, it's 8 episodes, you could watch it in an evening. Yeah, watch it. You'll have a great time. It has a beginning, middle, and end. It's got some good parts. Catherine Hahn is a showstopper. Mm-hmm. It's cohesive. Is it remarkable? Yes. Is it worth queuing up if you've never heard of it and you don't seem interested? Not really.
Right. I don't think it's going to reach any people who aren't already fans of this genre, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it is doing this genre pretty well. I would strongly recommend it to my mom.
Okay.
Is what I would say.
I'm so curious if your mom watches it and if she immediately is like, there's too much sex. But yeah, I have one more question. One more chat question, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
What are some roles of Catherine Hans that you've enjoyed in the past? She has had this trajectory of being like surprisingly good in tiny roles over and over and over and over again.
Right.
Like she's in Anchorman, she's in Step Brothers, she's in Wanderlust, she's in fucking The Dictator. Like she's like briefly in so many things. And she's good in all of them. But I think like she hasn't had too many starring roles besides like Crossing Jordan or whatever from the 90s. Because she was a main character on Crossing Jordan. But I've liked her in everything I've seen her. I like her in Kroll Show. I like her in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Shout out to her. She is a main character in Into the Spider-Verse. That's true.
Yeah, there's nothing that's jumping out at me. I just know that whenever I see her, I'm like, oh yeah, she's pretty funny.
And of course, she's the best character in WandaVision as Agatha. Which is good enough that I think they're giving her a show, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Catherine Hahn. She's really funny and in this show, like, knows how to cry and be emotional, and it works for me.
Mm-hmm.
We stan. Oh, any closing thoughts, John, before we take it home?
Nope. I think we pretty much covered it.
All right. Well, that's Tiny Beautiful Things, folks. We hope you enjoyed the discussion, and we hope that you share with your friends if they're curious about the series. We can point them to different sections of the show if they've only watched part of it or only want to know about part of it before committing. And that is another Should You Watch in the Can. We will announce the next Should You Watch closer to the date of it. We do these every 3 months, and that's going to be the way we continue to do it. But for now, let's take it to the plug zone. Magellan, my sweet friend, my sweet handsome friend, if I'm being honest, and this is a show that makes me want to be honest, where can people find you on other podcasts?
They can find me on a video game podcast that I do with my friend Justin called Super Smash Echoes, where we play video games related to the Super Smash Brothers franchise. So check it out, Super Smash Echoes. You can also read some of my writing over on my Substack, which is at notthatmagellan.substack.com. Ellen, what about you?
You can enjoy my work also on scanlinemedia.com. I'm on episodes of Oops All Anime. I'm on their bonus podcast, Oops More Anime, where we talk about, well, anime. And we're also doing the Creature Quorum, which is a podcast where my friend Sixth and I talk about creatures from various video games. And my other personal gig is Talking Marketing, a bi-monthly discussion conversational podcast hosted by the American Marketing Association's Boston chapter. Where you can find all sorts of fun discussions with marketing people about their work. So that's what I have. John, I can give it the chat's plug zone, if you don't mind.
Please do.
If you have questions, comments, concerns, or you want to talk about Tiny Beautiful Things or other Should You Watch shows, our email address is chatspod@gmail.com. We're always open to feedback there. We have a Twitter account. It is @chatspod. This is chatcpod. And this is also, of course, under the assumption that Twitter will still exist. It seems like it's in the air every day. If you're listening to this on YouTube, welcome. Make sure to give it a thumbs up and a subscription, because we've been posting more chat stuff, more Should You Watch stuff over on our YouTube channel, and we will in the future. If you're not and you're listening on a podcast app, consider giving us a rating on there, because it helps the algorithm out. And if you have a little bit of money, I strongly encourage you to check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/chatspod. Over here on the main feed, we've been releasing little free episodes from our Patreon, so you get a snippet of the bounty of content that we have over there. Movie commentaries, hangout calls, pilots, brackets, tier lists, everything you could wish for at $1, $3, and $5 a month. $1 and $3 a month gets you all of those things and the whole backlog. And $5 a month gets you all of those things plus a thank you at the end of every main feed. So that being said, thank you today to Stefan, Six, Nick and Pat of the Brothers at Infinite War, Michael, May Louise, Marcus, Magellan's mom, Lee, Kat, Justin, Jen, and Arthur. Thank you all for supporting Chats the Television Podcast. All things Chatspod can be found at chatspod.com. Our main feed art was done by Camilla. She can be found at Camilla Strader on all the social media platforms. And last but not least, before we take it home, we like to end on a segment called Chatsums Crunch, like a little tiny pickle, like a snack-em, where the host chats recommend you something or some things to enjoy or think about between now and the next episode of Chats. Magellan, what is or are your Chatsums for this week?
I have two Chatsums. One's a album, one's a game. So this is a musical Chatsum. I don't know how strong of a Chatsum this is. This is more of just like a report on a recent album. All right, Jack Harlow.
Oh, I listened to it.
Oh, you did? You did?
Yeah, Jackman?
Jackman. So Jack Harlow put out an album last year, Come Home, the Kids Miss You. And it was a very anthemic, poppy, radio bop type stuff. And he kind of caught some smoke for being a little like corny and not that interesting on it, which I thought was like, you know, whatever. Yeah, it was a bit of a boring album. I think that's a fair take, with some fun songs on it, but nothing more than that. And so he came back this year and released a shorter project called Jackman, which it's about 24 or 25 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And it's a pure like hip hop experience, like a kind of conscious rap sort of thing, where it's clear that he's making an effort to be like, all right, look, I get it. People thought that I was going a little too poppy on the last one. People thought that I didn't have a lot to say. And so I'm going to try to remind you that, like, I can do this whole rap thing. And he can. I mean, you know, some songs are better than others, but it's a return to form for Jack Harlow in a way that makes me think, like, okay, let's keep watching this guy and see what he's going to do next. Because I think there's some good stuff on Jackman. What did you think of it?
I thought it was really good, actually. Yeah, I hadn't listened to a hip-hop album in a little while. And I thought, like, lyrically, it was like fairly. I went into it with zero expectations. I've never been a Jack Harlow fan. I do like his verse on Industry Baby, but otherwise, whatever. He's got some pretty like conscious stuff. He's writing about like being like white, and he's like, is it my talent or is it my race? You know, stuff like that that I find really interesting. And also that song about how like all of his younger friends from childhood are like abusers or in jail for various reasons, and he's like, how do I have a squad when everybody I was friends with turned out to be awful? Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I love personal music like that. And you know, it's brief, but like pretty strong throughout.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty honest project, which is cool too. You know, he's like shirtless on the cover in his hometown or something. So it's sort of like, this is me, like the whatever. And his real name is Jackman. Jack is short for Jackman. So there's a little theater there in a way, but I think it's a pretty good outing.
Nice.
So that's that. And then I've been playing Star Wars Jedi Survivor. And look, if you liked Jedi Fallen Order and you also didn't like parts of it, copy and paste your opinions onto this game and they'll be more or less accurate. The combat is fun. It's even a little more fun than the previous one, but not super different. The story, I think, is where the biggest improvements have happened. I think the story is actually a lot better than the first game. It's a lot more interesting. The exploration stuff is a little better, but not much. But hey, if you like the last one and you like when game sequels are a little bit better than the game before, you'll probably like Star Wars Jedi Survivor, so I would recommend it.
Groovy. Cal Kestis adventures continue.
It's sort of the Jackman of Star Wars games.
You need to go to jail for something. I don't know what. For being my friend.
Gladly.
I have a Chatsum.
Okay, what do you got?
You guys probably haven't heard of this movie because it's gotten like no advertising or press that I've seen, but strong recommend to Polite Society. 2023's breakout hit about two young Pakistani sisters living in the UK, one of whom wants to be a stunt actress, the other of whom wants to be an artist, and the conflict within I don't want to spoil too much about the plot because I went into it with no expectations other than the poster looked cool and the premise sounded good. But it is an action comedy with the energy of a Scott Pilgrim without the obnoxious masculinity of a Scott Pilgrim. It's super funny. And if you have like young teenagers, male or female, I think they will freaking love this movie. It's so exciting and fun, and the action is awesome. It's got, it wears its references on its sleeves. There is a like Matrix hand wave moment and lots of good slow-mo and jump cuts and action scenes. It's just so fun. I had a great time. It's the best like hour 44 minutes you can spend on a Saturday evening right now, I think. So definitely check out Polite Society if you're looking for a fun movie to watch. It's still in theaters as of this recording. I don't know when it'll be on streaming, but that's what I got. And that's what we got, folks. We hope you enjoyed this latest episode of Should You Watch. We'll be back next week on the main feed talking about Powerless. Yeah, I'm excited to get into that. That'll be the return of our 13 under 13 coverage, shows that didn't make it more than 13 episodes before getting the axe. And I have been Alan. He has been Magellan. And we should be watching. Peace.